Hi, this is Marita Litauer. In late 2020, I had a friend come visit me. She does some stand-up comedy, and she did a little show for my friends. That reminded me of the time I'd been called on to fill in, last minute, for a comedian who was scheduled to be the opening at a major women's conference. I had told them I wasn't a comedian, but as long as I could use the framework of the personalities, I was pretty funny. That was good enough for the desperate meeting planner. Because my slot was the conference opening, I was told I had to stick with the limited time frame, which was much shorter than I was used to. Following my friend's visit, I hunted around and found the recording of this one-time experience. The women in the audience laughed. I hope you do too.
You have noticed that there are people out there who are different from you. Any of you ever noticed that? How many of you live with, work with, or used to live with that person who is different from you? Okay? How many of you have ever tried to change that person who is different from you? All right, good, we're all in the right place tonight. How often has that ever worked when you've tried to change that person? Not very often, does it? Hopefully, all of you have received a handout that's being passed out right now that looks like this. It says the personality puzzle on the top of it. And what we're going to do tonight is take a quick, fun look at the different personality types that we have and how we can learn to get along with those other people better. Some of you might have seen this Gary Larson card. It's a favorite of mine. And it says on the front of it, the top frame here, which I'm sure you can't see, so I'll describe it for you. But the top frame here has a woman with big hair. And I want you to know, when I left Albuquerque, New Mexico this morning, I had big hair. But it's dry there. On this picture, the woman with big hair has her arms outstretched. She has a bright colored dress with flowers on it. On the table in front of her is a glass that is filled partway. And she looks at that glass and she says, "The glass is half full." Then the next frame has a gentleman. He's got his hands down at his sides. He's got kind of plain clothing on. And he says, "The glass is half empty." The next one has a gentleman and he's got his hand up to his mouth and he says, "Half full, no wait, half empty." No, half, what was the question? The last square has a gentleman with his hands on his hips, and he looks at that very same glass of water that they've all looked at, and he says, "Hey, I ordered a cheeseburger." On the cover it says, the four basic personality types, and inside the card it says, "Remember, it's all in how you look at it." Well, as each one of you tonight have already indicated, you've noticed that there are people out there who are different from you, who see life differently from the way you see it. You see, each one of us came kind of prepackaged with kind of a filter. I like to think of it as a certain color glasses through which we view life, and we do see life differently. Any of you that are married, any of you that have parents or children or siblings or work with anybody, which should cover all of you, know that there are people out there who are different from you. Now, there are various different systems out there in the world, and they use the same basic idea, but maybe different terminology than from what I'm going to use tonight. In the books that my mom and I have written together, Personality Plus, Personality Puzzle, Getting Along with Almost Anybody, we like to use the original terms that Hippocrates created over 2,000 years ago, the Greek terms, plus a modern day adjective to those words. And you can see that on the handout that you have in front of you. The one with the big hair, with the brightly flowered dress, with her arms outstretched, that says, "The glass is half full," would be the one that we would call the popular sanguine personality. You might think of them as the talker of life. Then we have the one who's got his hands down at his side, who looks at that same glass of water and says, "The glass is half empty." He would be the one that we would call the perfect melancholy personality, or the thinker of life. Then we have the one on the card that's looking at the glass of water and saying, "Half full, no, half empty, no, half," what was the question? And that would be and the peaceful, phlegmatic personality, and that would be the watcher of life, and the one who puts his hands on his hips and says, "Hey, I ordered a cheeseburger," would be the doer of life, what we call the powerful, choleric personalities. We're going to look at the four basic personality types, and I'm going to share with you first what I call the visible pieces of the puzzle, which is how to identify the personality type of other people. Because I find that if you know what to look for in other people, if you know how to identify their personality type, you can improve your relationship with them. Romans 12:18 says, "If possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men." And I believe it's our job, our duty as Christians, to learn to get along with those other people. As that verse says, the first part says, Romans 12:18, if possible. It's like God is giving us a disclaimer saying, I know you can't do this, but you should try. This is something you should strive for. If possible, the second part says, so far as it depends on you. That means it's each of our responsibilities to do what we can do to improve our relationship with other people. The last part says, be at peace with all men. So as we look at this evening, keep this in mind. We're going to look at the popular sanguine personality first and how you can identify them. Now, for those of us who are the popular sanguine, there's two key things that you might want to keep in mind in looking at the popular sanguine personality. Two words. The first one is that the popular sanguine is loud. Now, most popular sanguines have a loud voice that can be heard above the crowd. When my husband and I were dating, we would go out to restaurants, and I would be talking and telling a story. Now, those of you who already know that you are that popular sanguine personality, what happens to us when we get excited? We get wound up. What happens to our voice? It gets louder, right? Exactly. So we're out to a restaurant, and I'm telling my husband a story. Now, this only happened when we were dating because I've learned since then. I've grown and matured. But when we were dating, we'd be out in a restaurant, and I would tell him a story, and I would be getting excited, and I would get wound up. Now, those of you who are sanguine, what happens if we're out somewhere and we see people around us listening, straining to listen to what we're saying? What are we going to do? Talk louder, exactly, so they don't have to struggle to hear. Because we feel the bigger the audience, the better the story. Now, if you're married to someone like I am, who is a perfect melancholy, and we do usually marry someone who's opposite from us, what's your spouse going to be doing while you're talking loud? What do they do? Exactly. You've got it. You've been there. I can tell. So he would shush me constantly. So we eat at home most of the time now. But the popular sanguines have a loud voice. They also tend to like loud clothing. Popular sanguines like bright colors, they like big prints, they like things that will get them noticed. Now, obviously, as women, we have more options on loud clothing than men do. But even a popular sanguine man, if he has to wear like a gray business suit, you'll see he'll cross his legs and you'll see like polka-dotted socks. Something, or he'll take off his sport coat and underneath will be Mickey Mouse suspenders. You know, just something that says, I will not be put into that little box. So popular sanguines tend to have a loud voice and they like loud clothing. Popular sanguines also tend to be very open. First off, popular sanguines have an open mouth. They like to talk. That's why we call them the talker. The popular sanguine has an open mouth. The popular sanguine also has an open life. The popular sanguine is the kind of person who has no secrets. And if you have a secret, it is best not to tell someone who is a popular sanguine. One day in my office, I used to have a gal that worked for us by the name of Kathy, and I said to Kathy one day, I said to her, Kathy, you give the popular sanguine all new meaning. Kathy was just so 100% popular sanguine personality, and one day in the office, we had a rare moment where it was quiet and everybody was working, and in this quietness, Kathy loudly pronounced, "It has passed." We all kind of looked at her like, "What, Kathy, what has passed?" And she said, "My egg, I ovulated." And we were like, "You what?" When we picked our jaws up off the floor and we began to think about what she had said, we said, how do you know? She said, oh, I can tell, I can feel it. Well, you know, there was no reason why we needed to know this. She was not trying to get pregnant or anything. We were not rushing her home at the moment her temperature hit the right thing or anything. But she felt led to let us know this. Popular sanguines have an open life. One of my husband's favorite nicknames for me is Miss Free Information. Now, popular sanguines also have open body language. Popular sanguines are the open, huggy, touchy, kissy, feely kind of person. Now, if you're an event like this, you might see somebody in this whole group of people. You might see someone here that you have not seen for years. And you see them across the way out there at the break time, and you'll go, oh, hi, it's so good to see you. And you hug, and you touch, and you kiss on them. Now, if you are kissing and hugging on someone who is a perfect melancholy, what kind of response are you probably going to get? Exactly. They're like, you get this sense, you're not sure what you did, but you know you did something wrong. That takes us into the perfect melancholy. They're the opposite of the popular sanguine, which is why on your paper they're arranged that way. The popular sanguine is loud and open. That means the perfect melancholy is quiet and closed. They have a quiet voice. One of my very best friends is perfect melancholy. I'm so glad that she's finally gotten online, because when we can talk now on the computer, I don't have to worry about her voice, because we're those of us who are sanguine, as we get wound up, our voice gets louder. The perfect melancholy is you talk to them for a while and they get comfortable. What happens to their voice? Softer. This friend of mine, I'm on the phone with her and I'm constantly going, what? What? What did you say? And as she gets comfortable, her voice gets more quiet. Perfect melancholies also like quiet clothing. They like the basic classic colors. They like beige, navy, khaki, burgundy, black. My husband has 5 pairs of khaki slacks and thinks he needs more because they are not all perfect any longer. I went shopping with a melancholy friend one day and I pulled out this bright, gaudy, trendy thing. And I said, oh, look at this, isn't this cute? And my friend kind of wrinkled up her nose and said, why would you want to buy that? It's going to be out of style next year. And I thought, oh, darn, I'll have to buy new things next year. I hate it when that happens. But perfect melancholies like classic things, styles that are traditional and that endure. They tend to be like more quiet clothing. Perfect melancholies are also closed. First off, they have their mouth closed. They don't speak unless they really have something to say. Now, for those of you who are popular sanguine, think of how much less you would say if you eliminated everything that nobody really needed to hear. My husband was in the military when I met him, and it suited him very well because the military operates on what they call a need-to-know basis. Now, he doesn't tell you a whole lot when he only tells you what you need to know. So he has a closed mouth. Perfect melancholies also have a closed life. They do not tell you intimate secrets about their life unless you are intimate with them. And if you're married to a perfect melancholy, you know, even then sometimes it's hard. You gotta pry that out. So they tend to have a closed life, and their body language is closed. If they use body language, gestures at all, they will be small, precise, and close to the body. Now, I like to think of the perfect melancholy as the greatest respecter of space. Perfect melancholies are the greatest respecter of space, and as I said, they don't love those of us who are popular sanguine coming and hugging and kissing and touching on them. And I didn't used to know why until I watched my husband iron. Earlier in our marriage, I proved to be an unsatisfactory ironer. And so I watched him iron one day. He makes his own starch special. He buys the bottle and has a sprayer and mixes it up so he has the exact right formulation. You know, and when you spend that much time looking perfect, those of us that come at them, hi, 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 how you doing? They're afraid they're going to get wrinkled. And that's the problem. So perfect melancholies are quiet and they are closed. Now then we look at the powerful choleric personality. They're the third most obvious or the second least obvious to identify depending on your perspective. Now they don't have quite the same obvious clothing things or body language things that the other two personality types do, But one of the things that makes it the most easy to identify the powerful choleric personality is the air when they walk into the room. You see, a powerful choleric does not walk into a room unnoticed. If this person is someone in your life who is a positive influence, when they walk in, they bring with them a sense of excitement and energy. If this person is someone in your life who is a negative influence, they bring with them a sense of stress and tension. But I think one of the main reasons that they cannot walk into a room unnoticed is the way the powerful choleric walks, which is like this. And the floor shakes as they go by. You can see a scowl on their face. Now, it's not necessarily that they're angry, although it might be because the powerful choleric does tend to get more angry than others. It's more that they are intense and they are focused. Another thing to help you to identify the powerful choleric, the worker personality, is there are three body language gestures that are unique to them. And if you know someone who does any one of these three gestures regularly, no personality test is needed. You know you have yourself the powerful choleric. The first and most common one for the powerful choleric is pointing. Now, this is not because they're telling you to turn left at the next light. This is just a part of their vocabulary, the pointing. They're telling you what to do and where to go when they wag their finger in your face. Now, remember the term in your face, because that is the powerful choleric personality. I mentioned that the perfect melancholy is the greatest respecter of space. The powerful choleric is the greatest invader of space. If you are talking to someone at a social gathering and they are in your face, what is your natural reaction to do when you talk to that person? Back up. And what do they do when you back up? Move forward, okay? So if you are at a gathering and you are talking to someone and you find yourself plastered against a wall, you know you have got yourself a powerful choleric. No personality test is needed. Now, additionally, powerful cholerics will also use a fist. Pounding on a desk or a table for emphasis. If there's nothing around to pound on, they may pound into their hand because powerful cholerics like that kind of emphasis. And the third gesture that's unique to the powerful choleric is hands on their hips, usually accompanied by a look that says, "How could you possibly be so stupid? I can't believe you did that." Now, the last one that we're going to look at is what I call the peaceful phlegmatic personality. And we're looking at the peaceful phlegmatic last, not because they're the least important, not at all. There's no such thing as one more important than another, but because they are the least obvious to identify. The peaceful phlegmatic does not have obvious clothing things or obvious gestures to watch for. The peaceful phlegmatic is the content, low-key, easygoing personality. They kind of have an unwritten motto, which is, why stand when you can sit? Why sit when you can lie down? So they'll be the person that you'll see when they're seated, they're as close to reclining as they possibly can be. I've taught seminars where I've had people for 3 days in the front row, and they sat like this the entire time, as close to reclining as possible. Now, there you know you've got yourself a peaceful phlegmatic. Now, the peaceful phlegmatic, a couple other traits of theirs, is they tend to go for the most casual, comfortable clothing. I remember one day I was speaking somewhere and I had on a brand new pair of shoes. And I made a comment to the audience that I'd been to the outlet malls in that area the night before and I had bought these new great shoes that I had on. And when I was done, someone came up to me and said, "Are they comfortable?" I thought, comfortable. Never even dawned on me, are they comfortable? Are they the right color? Do they make my legs look good? Were they under $30? You know, these are the things that were important to me. But the peaceful phlegmatic, they always look for the more comfortable end of the spectrum. So those are some things that will help you to identify the personalities that you live and work with. Now, you know, it's important to understand this just for the sake of basic communication. Because you see, based on our personality type, as that Gary Larson card said, it's all in how you look at it, we view life through an entirely different filter. We use an entirely different vocabulary. One day, I was cooking breakfast for my husband, and this was at a time in our life when I did not make him breakfast every day because he had a long drive to work, and we both skipped breakfast in favor of sleep. But on weekends, I'm kind of a gourmet cook, and so I made him a nice breakfast. I made him fresh squeezed orange juice, freshly ground coffee, bacon, and eggs, the whole nine yards. I made him a terrific breakfast. So I took the breakfast that I had for him and I carried it into him and I put it down in front of him. I set the plate on the table and Chuck started eating. I said to him, "Chuck, how's your breakfast?" And he said his breakfast was fine. Now I can see some of you have been there. Now, for those of you who know that you are like me, at least 50% of that popular sanguine kind of personality, on a scale of 1 to 10, if 10 is way up here and 1 is way down here, where is the word fine? Way down there, right? I can see you're pointing down. Fine is way down there. Now, you see, I have had to learn that he has a different personality from me. We see things totally differently. To me, fine is like an insult. One day I called him while I was on the road, as I often do or always do when I'm on the road, and I called him up at the end of the day, and I said, "Chuck, how was your day?" And he said, "It was fine." And I said, "What was wrong?" He said, "Nothing. I said it was fine." And then he said to me, "You need to learn that for me, fine is about as good as it ever gets." Now, I don't know about you, but for me, if I had to face a life of fine, I would commit suicide tomorrow because a life of fine is not worth living. But I've had to learn for a perfect melancholy that fine is about as good as it ever gets. It's like fine china, fine crystal, fine sterling. Fine is about as good as it ever gets. On the other hand, he's learned that for me, fine is not an acceptable answer. When I come home and I say, "Chuck, how do I look?" He's learned to add entire new words to his vocabulary. He has learned superlatives. He has learned words like terrific, wonderful, fabulous, amazing, awesome, whole new words he's added to his vocabulary. So that day when I served him his breakfast and he said that his breakfast was fine, I said to him, "Wrong answer. We're going to try this over again." And I took his breakfast back into the kitchen. I walked back out with his plate of breakfast and I set it down in front of him and I said to him, "Chuck, how's your breakfast?" And he looked up at me with a big fake smile on his face and he said, "This is the best breakfast I have ever had in my entire life." And I said to him, "Good, now you can have breakfast tomorrow." You see, for those of us who are popular sanguines, we feel that phony joy is better than genuine depression. Now, when you look at the personalities, the different personalities in your life, you can see that there are differences among them. Those of us who are the popular sanguine personality, we tend to be very curious by nature. One day I made a comment to my husband about a friend of his, and I made this comment that this particular friend colored his hair. And my husband said, "Well, how do you know he colors his hair?" And I said, "Well, other than the fact that it drips down his face when he sweats, saw the hair color under his sink." Now, my husband is a perfect melancholy, and he looked at me mortified, and he said, "What were you doing looking under his sink?" And I said, "Well, I was in there using the bathroom when there were no magazines. And I didn't mean to, it just happened." Now, I'm sure some of you can probably relate to that, because as I share that, I found as I go around the country that most of us who are popular sanguines, we do that. I was speaking a couple years ago in Paducah, Kentucky, at a church down there, and they had assigned me a shepherd, someone to take care of me as a speaker, and her name was Roxy, and Roxy was a sanguine. It was break time. I don't drink coffee, I drink tea, and I'm really kind of fussy. I only like one kind of tea, and I carry my tea bags with me. But it was break time and I wanted a cup of tea, but I had lost Roxy, my shepherd. She was sanguine and she had gotten distracted with some friends of hers. And so as I'm roaming through the hall of the church, the pastor's wife sees me, the speaker, roaming around the church alone. And she says, "Can I help you find something?" And I waved my tea bag and I said, "Well, I'm trying to find some hot water so I can have some tea." And she said, "Oh, well, go down there, make a left. The kitchen's down there. Someone will help you." So I go down there, go to the kitchen. I look around. No one is there. But I think, okay, I'm a big girl. I can handle this myself. I see a sink. I see styrofoam cups. And I see a microwave oven. Okay, I can handle hot water. So I fill the styrofoam cup. I put it in the microwave. But you know, it takes about 2 minutes. So it's going around in the microwave. And I'm like, I'm looking around this kitchen. And I see the cupboard right above the microwave is open just about this much. And inside the cupboard, I see individually wrapped saltine crackers. Now, I do not like saltine crackers at all. I have to be really starving to eat a saltine cracker. But with even not wanting a saltine cracker, without thinking, I opened the cupboard door. Now, someone comes in, and there I am, the speaker, standing in the church kitchen, snooping through the cupboards. And the person says to me, "Can I help you find something?" And I said, "No, I was just looking, thank you." Now, my husband, when he found out that I am not the only one who does this, he got a great idea. One year at Christmas time, we got a Christmas card, and in that Christmas card was a little computer chip type thing. You know those kind that when you open up the card, it plays jingle bells? He took that little computer chip out of that greeting card, and he put it in the drawer next to the toilet in the guest bathroom. Now, I can tell those of you who are laughing, the hardest are the ones who do this. Because you can picture yourself in someone's bathroom, can't you? And you open up the drawer and suddenly it starts to play jingle bells. Can you just picture? We could always tell from the outside who the popular sanguines were on the inside. Popular sanguines also love people and assume that everybody else loves us. I was at my sister's house one day. We were all outdoors having a jacuzzi in the hot tub there. And my middle nephew, Jonathan, who's a popular sanguine, he comes out. He's quite young at the time. And he's out there at the edge of the pool, and he stands there, and he's thinking, looking heavenward, and he says, "My mommy loves me. My daddy loves me. My grammy loves me. My papa loves me. My Aunt Rita loves me. My Uncle Chuck loves me." And he stops for a moment, and he says, "The whole world loves me." Those of us who are popular sanguine just assume the whole world does love us. Now, the powerful cholerics, they are natural-born leaders. My youngest nephew, Brian, he is choleric. When he was very young, he would point with two fingers. And we said to my sister, "Now, this is the one who is going to give you a run for your money. He is a two-fingered choleric." One day he was at school. Powerful cholerics are born leaders. And he was at school one day, and a mother came to talk to the teacher. And the mother says to the teacher, "How is Amy doing?" And little Brian speaks up and says, "Amy is doing much better." And the teacher looks down at Brian and says, "Brian, she did not ask you, she asked me." And he said, "But I sit next to Amy. I know much better how she's doing than you do." From that point on, the mother asked her questions to Brian, because he obviously knew what was going on. Powerful cholerics also exude confidence. Now, powerful cholerics tend to be unsympathetic people. If you're married to one and you've ever been sick, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Powerful cholerics view sickness as a weakness. Perhaps you've seen this Mary Engelbright Get Well card. It says on the front, "Snap out of it." And on the inside it says, "And get well soon." This one's another favorite of mine. This is from the Hallmark Shoebox greeting card line. If you're familiar with those, Maxine, she's a curmudgeon. She's kind of a combination of the powerful choleric and the perfect melancholy. And this card is a get well card. And on the front it says, "Heard you're sick." And you open it up and it says, "Wimp." So powerful cholerics tend to be unsympathetic. Now, the perfect melancholy, they like charts, graphs, and lists. All of life for the perfect melancholy is organized and on a chart or a graph or a list. One day I went into my husband's office at home, and at this time he had a roll-top desk that had all these little cubby holes along the top, and hanging off of one of the cubby holes was a post-it note. And the post-it note had a list of a couple of electronic items he had recently purchased listed on it. And I said to him, Chuck, what's this list? And he said to me, this is my list of things waiting to get on the list. I said, your list of things waiting to get on the list. He said, yes. And he opened up a file drawer and he pulled out a pristine file folder with a typed label. It said inventory. Inside that folder was one piece of paper. Now, I don't know about you, but I would never use a file folder for one piece of paper. But when I think about it, it does explain why my desk looks like it does. Because I have all those one pieces of paper that I don't know what to do with, so they're all just kind of there. But as a perfect melancholy, he had a file folder with one piece of paper. He pulled this out, it was perfectly typed. And he said, this is my inventory. This was in pre-computer days. And he said, sometimes when I buy something new, I do not have time the day I buy it to get out the typewriter, to plug it in, to get out my list, and add the new item onto my typewriter. He said, so I put it here on my list of things that's waiting to get on the list. Now, perfect melancholies, it seems so logical when he explained it to me that way. Perfect melancholies are also very analytical and security conscious. Now, a few years back, before our garage was full of collectible items, and we used to actually use the garage, my husband is very concerned about security. And he used to work in the San Diego Police Department, and he learned in the police department that there were some scams going on. He learned that people would go up and down the street with vans full of electronic equipment, and that they could, like, decode your garage door. And they would do this, these codings until someone's garage door went up, and then they would go in and rob your things. He also learned in California, I don't know what you have here, but we lived in California at the time, and in California, the garage doors are all one solid piece, and so instead of opening in sections, they open one big piece. And he learned that people, what they would do is they would pry open the corner of your garage, even though you had a garage door open or keeping it closed, and children could slip in, go in and push the button and turn on, open your garage door. So being the security conscious type he is, he came up with several ways to get around this so that we would be secure. Now every house we buy, whenever we buy a new house or move or whatever, he goes and changes the lock on the garage door. You know, usually you put your key in your garage to get into your house, but not in our house. In our house, you have to have a key from inside the house to get into the garage. So that if someone was to break into our house, they could take the silver, the stereo, the TV, all those things, but they could not get into the garage. So he got this great idea. He went to Radio Shack, and Radio Shack has these little things that are designed to turn your lamp on from across the room. Electrical things, and he got us each one of those for our cars so that when we backed out of the garage, we would hit the garage door button and it would close the garage door, and then we would hit this other button and it would turn off the electricity to the garage door opener so that anyone going up and down the street in a van full of electronic equipment could not get in. But that didn't solve the prying up the corner problem. So then he got this other great idea. He went and he bought a metal bar, and he bought some wire and some brackets and some things, and he drilled a hole in the concrete in the garage, and he rigged up this thing so that when you close the garage door, this metal bar locks into the concrete. So nobody can pry up the garage. So it has like a deadbolt lock on the garage door that is automatic. And he went out and analyzed this whole thing to figure out how to make it more security conscious. So perfect melancholies tend to be kind of analytical. Now, the peaceful phlegmatic. The peaceful phlegmatic is someone who is good under pressure. The peaceful phlegmatic can operate in stressful settings and be fine. A friend of mine who's a nurse told me about a situation in the hospital where she worked, and they had one of those code alert things that went over the loudspeaker that meant that somebody was having a cardiac arrest. Well, there was panic ensued. Oh, we've got to go do this. Well, they were looking for what they call, I guess, the crash cart, the thing that will start the heart back up, and they could not find this crash cart. Someone's having a cardiac arrest. They can't find the equipment. Everybody is scurrying around, but there was a gentleman on the floor. His name was David. He's a peaceful phlegmatic. And what did he do? Good under pressure? Well, everybody's frantic. David went into the hospital room where this person was having a cardiac arrest, thumped on their chest a few times, and started their heart. Back going again. The peaceful phlegmatic is good under pressure. However, they tend to be not very goal-oriented. One of my girlfriends has a son who's a peaceful phlegmatic, and she told me, well, he's not very goal-oriented. She's a choleric. It drives her nuts. That he has a new goal. A few months ago, but her parents were staying with them for a month. They were building a house nearby, and while their house was being built, they were staying with my friend. Now, her parents are retired. Brandon, who's 9 years old, was very intrigued. He'd watch Mom and Dad get up and go to work in the morning, and Grandma and Grandpa would stay there. And they seemed to not do anything. Brandon watched this for a month and said, Grandpa, what do you do? He says, well, I'm retired. I don't have to do anything. Well, now Brandon has a new goal. He's 9 years old. What's his goal in life? He wants to retire. He cannot wait to retire. It's as if his life at 9 years old has been so difficult. But he's ready to retire. Another friend of mine is a son whose name is Nathan, and he's peaceful phlegmatic, and he was visiting his choleric grandmother one day. While he was visiting his choleric grandmother, he was laying on the sofa in the living room, flipping through the channels, watching TV. Choleric grandmother's in the kitchen cooking dinner. She gets frustrated, and she comes out, and she says to him, Nathan, how can you be sitting out here watching TV? Well, I'm in there working. Typical concern of the powerful choleric personality. And he says, Grandma, I'll do anything you ask me to do, but I'm not volunteering for anything. Peaceful phlegmatics tend to stay uninvolved. Now, as we've looked at this, had a fun time looking at some of the different personalities this evening. I hope that for those of you that live and work with other people who are different from you, that you will realize that our human nature is that we want to defend ourselves and how we are. Oh, well, that's just the way I am. Accept me and get used to it. But we expect other people around us to change. That's our human nature. But his nature, what he wants us to do, is to accept other people. Accept the people who are around us. And as you be able to identify their personality type, you can begin to accept them, understand their strengths and weaknesses, so we can accept other people, as Romans 12, 18 says, if possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. We want to learn to get along with other people. Romans 12, 12 in the Living Version says, don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but be a new and different person with a fresh newness in all you think. So rather than expecting other people to change, which is the human nature, his nature is for us to accept them as they are, to think differently, not to adopt the ways of the world. And the reason we want to understand our personality for yourself, for your own personality, is so that you can look at yourself, see where your strengths and weaknesses are, and begin to change yourself. I've shared with you what I call the visible pieces of the puzzle, how to visibly identify the personality type of the people that you live and work with so that you can begin to understand those other people. If you've not ever looked at your own personality before, out there on the book table is a simple little personality test that you could take to identify your own personality. And that's important for us because as Christians, as it says in 2 Corinthians 3:18, it says, as the Spirit of the Lord works within us, we become more and more like Him. And so as a Christian, our ultimate goal in life is to become more like Christ. And if we were to do a personality analysis on Christ, you would see that He has the strengths of all four personalities and the weaknesses of none. And so when we look at our own personality, we can grow and we can mature so that as the Spirit of the Lord works within us, we become more and more like Him. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this fun and fast treatment of the personalities. If you'd like a more in-depth presentation, please check out the various resources available at thepersonalities.com. That's the word the word personalities, plural, .com. Once again, thepersonalities.com.